When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Charmed, and welcome back to Let Me Ruin Your Life with me, Serena Shahidi. Hello. How are you? I hope you're okay. You know what I mean? People keep asking, I keep like running into people who I run into occasionally at parties, and they're like, oh my God, how have you been? And it's always just a sound that I reply with, kind of a, ooh, you know what I mean? Yeah, I'm in a bit of a weird mood. I think it's because I made the tragic mistake of drinking two nights in a row. Not, like, a crazy amount, but, like, four drinks two nights in a row. And it has really hit me today. Well, this past night, so I was, like, celebrating my friend's birthday, open bar, didn't go crazy, but whatever. And then went home, went to sleep, woke up in the middle of the night, the way you do when you've been drinking, where you wake up in the middle of the night just, like, needing water. But this time, just the feeling of impending doom, I was like, I'm gonna die. I am going to die. Like, my heart was beating so fast that, like, all the heartbeats were kind of blending into one. And I was like, is my heart not actually beating at all? And then I thought I was going to have a heart attack. But then I went back to bed. And I woke up late, accidentally. And here I am. And I'm thinking maybe I need to stop. At least not stop drinking, but at least not drink two nights in a row, which used to be my rule for myself. And I think that's not a bad one. Because it's one thing to have a night where you're out drinking. It's another thing to have two of those nights in a row. You kind of lose your grasp of time and reality. That's when it kind of starts to feel terrible, because I'm not like a, ooh, let me do like a dry January. I'm not that girl. I'm not that girl. Because I've tried that and I didn't feel any better. So, you know, that's bad news in the sense of that means that there's not this simple thing that I can do to feel better of like giving up alcohol. But it's good news in that I can still drink. Should I become one of those people who goes, I'm sober curious. Don't you love those people? I'm sober curious. Which, if you don't know what that means that you're still drinking, but you're thinking about not drinking. Like, if you're anything curious, that just means that you're not participating in that thing. Being sober curious is like aligning yourself with sobriety. You're drinking. You're drinking. You're not associated with sobriety in any way, shape, or form. You're just thinking about it. That is not being sober curious. That's just called thinking. That's a different thing. It's different. And there's also, oh my God, there's people who go, well, I don't want to do dry January, so I'll do damp January. So you're drinking. Why not just say I'm trying to drink less is my thing. Why do we have to, like, come up with these terms to, like, associate ourselves with sobriety and, like, wellness and all that? Why don't you just say, like, I don't think I'm gonna go out tonight. Maybe that's my new thing, just saying no. to drugs and alcohol. Dare to say no. I do have a Dare shirt that I got from the little boys section of TJ Maxx, so maybe I'll put that on and really represent my newfound community. Yeah, I do kind of still have the feeling that I'm about to die, but we're gonna roll with it. Maybe you have that feeling as well. Maybe we can just feel that alongside each other and just collectively experience the heart murmurs that I'm currently think I'm experiencing. Another life update. I got a tragic haircut. This is a tragic episode in general, I guess. I did get a tragic haircut recently. I talked about in the last episode, I was like, gotta go, have to get a haircut. And it was literally, you know that meme that's like, photos taken seconds before disaster? That was that. Literally podcasts recorded maybe an hour before disaster. Because I went to a place that I normally go to, which is like not a nice place. It's whatever. They do like sell costume jewelry as well as give haircuts. But, you know, I'm like, well, I just get a blunt bob. So who am I to go to a nice place? For what? I'm not getting color. I'm not getting layers. I'm not getting any of that. I just need somebody who isn't me to cut straight across because I can't see the back of my head. Otherwise, I would do it. I went to this place, and the woman who cut my hair didn't really speak English, so I had to translate with another girl to tell her what a haircut I wanted. And I was like, you know, I just want like a blunt chin length bob. And she was like, okay, yeah, I can do that. And then she did that. And then she held up my bangs and was like, And I wasn't thinking at the time. This is not a time that you can just recklessly say yes when someone's about to cut your bangs and you don't know exactly what to expect. And it isn't her fault. It isn't her fault. I should have had the other girl come back and translate for us. But I was like, oh, you're going to trim my bangs a tiny amount? Because she held her fingers up and was like, did a little like pinch to be like, oh, just a little. So I was like, oh, she's going to trim my bangs just a little amount. Okay, don't mind if I do. Oh, I mean, she basically cut me like blunt bangs almost, and that is not my look. That is not my look. That's never been my look. I've tried it as a child. I've tried it as an adult. People always want to see me in blunt bangs because I do have both a big forehead and kind of a like a look that would make sense with bangs. But if you've ever seen me with blunt bangs, you know, no, 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 no. Nay, 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 nay. And I've just kind of been living with that. I mean, it's been a week, so it's not looking quite as bad. I mean, like a week of hair growth for bangs is kind of a lot. Bangs are famously the shortest part of hair. So I don't feel terrible about it. And it's also, when you get a bad haircut, people are never nicer about your appearance. You will never get as many compliments than when you walk into a room and you're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I just got the most tragic haircut of all time. People will be like, no, you look amazing. And they're fully lying. But at the same time, who really cares? I called Tess after I got it done and I was like in tears. And she was like, no, it's like you're going for, now you're like a flapper. Like it's old school. Like it's edgy. It's Eastern European. People are really trying to make me feel better, and I really appreciate that. I even, oh my God, this is not what you want to happen when you get a bad haircut. But yesterday, last night, when I was at that party that I was at, I ran into Brad Mondo, the internet hairstylist, and I was like, I literally went up to him, and I was like, oh my God, so nice to see you in person, but I just got this haircut. And you are the last bitch in this town I wanted to see. But he was very nice about it. He has beautiful skin in person. Beautiful skin. Stunning. So smooth. Baby. No, but getting a bad haircut is kind of like going through a breakup. It's like the one time that people really feel for you because it's something that you can see. Like if you're just kind of, I don't know, if you're just sad in general or you just don't think you look great that day, nobody gives a fuck. They don't care because they can't see it. But when you're like, okay, visibly there's something going on with my hair, or, you know, breakup wise, the guy I usually bring to social events, I'm now going alone, then people feel so bad for you. So at least that's nice. But I will say, never let anyone else cut your bangs. Even if they're a great hairstylist and you don't know what you're doing at all, I now am of the belief that you should still be cutting your own bangs. Unless you're one of those people who, like, you know, you see videos online where somebody's like, oh, let me just like cut straight across the middle of my forehead because I want bangs. And then the hair like gets released and they're like, oh, and it's like, what were you expecting? Like, yeah, if you cut straight across, there's going to be a line straight across. Hello. What are you talking about? Anyway, but here's a good experience I had recently. I went to a screening of a film. I won't even say movie. I went to a screening of a film by the name of Mafia Mama. And let me tell you exactly about this film. It's starring Toni Collette and Monica Bellucci and some other people. So Toni Collette, she is like a suburban mom, whatever, living this suburban life. Her husband just cheated on her. Her life is kind of falling apart. And she gets a call that's like, your grandfather has passed. You need to come to Italy to settle the affairs. And she's like, okay, well, you know, my husband just cheated on me. What do I have to lose? Let me go to Italy, see if I can find like a hot Italian guy after the funeral. You know, maybe she'll be dressed in all black and it'll be flattering and she'll find a man, whatever. She goes to Italy, goes to the funeral, and as for the affairs to be settled, she finds out, shock of all shocks, that her grandfather was a part of the mafia, if you will, and also that they want her to take over and, like, be the mob boss. And it's so fun. Monica Bellucci plays, like, I don't exactly know what her role is. It's like basically Toni Collette's like mob mentor, even though she's not like a part of the actual family, like as far as blood and genetics goes. By the way, Toni Collette and Monica Bellucci were both at the screening. I don't know if it was technically the premiere. I don't know. But they were both there, which was amazing. Tess ran into Teresa Giudice / Giudice, depends on if she's feeling Italian that day or not, ran into her in the bathroom. So that was, I mean, star-studded. It was such a fun movie. I loved it. And I do not like anything action-y. I don't. It's not my thing. I like, I don't mind, like, gore and stuff like that. I think that's kind of fun. There's one scene that's, like, really gory, and it involves a high heel. And I won't give it away, but I enjoyed that. I mean, the theater was astonished. Like, people were gasping. They couldn't believe it. I was living. But what I posted on my story and my, like, primary thought about the movie is that this is what Cocaine Bear wished it was. I don't know if I talked about Cocaine Bear. I hated Cocaine Bear. It was so lame. It was so not funny. Because the entire point of Cocaine Bear is like, it's a bear and it's on cocaine. And every joke in the movie is like, that bear is on cocaine. Like, cue laughter. Who gives a fuck? We bought tickets to a movie called Cocaine Bear. We know the bear's on cocaine. It's not funny anymore. I don't care anymore. I'm over it. Give me a good joke that isn't just the title of the movie. And Mafia Mama had some good jokes, and they, like, actually played off of the humor of, like, she's a suburban mom who's now been, like, thrust into this crazy world, and it's not just her being like, I'm a mom and I'm in the mafia.
What?
Also, my favorite part of it is that Toni Collette's character repeatedly gets into so much trouble because she just completely folds whenever she meets an attractive Italian man. And honey, if that isn't the story of my life, if that isn't the realest thing ever been done in a film, I don't know what to say. So I highly recommend that you guys watch that when it comes out. Even if you don't really like action, or if you just like it a little, because it's not crazy in that aspect. But it is just a really fun movie. I loved it. I went in being like, this is potentially going to be so ridiculous, but I am looking forward to it anyway. Even though I will say, the girl sitting behind me in the theater, I apologize on the off chance that she's listening to this, but if you were the girl sitting behind me in the theater, you're a monster. You're a monster. She was kicking the back of my chair like a toddler on an airplane for 2 hours straight. Drop it. She was like eating like popcorn and candy and just dropping it everywhere. And when I stood up and looked behind me, when she had already left and I looked at where she was sitting, girl, an entire bag of popcorn spilled on the ground, like bag and all on the ground. This woman is a monster. I could not believe my eyes. And you know what? Teresa Giudice / Giudice would never. I celebrated Passover for the first time this past week. That was really fun with my best friend, who's Jewish, and a handful of other people. And it was my first ever Passover because I am not Jewish. And it's so interesting. There's so many traditions. There's like, you have to do 4 glasses of wine. You like eat horseradish. There's like a tradition where you break off some of the matzah and hide it somewhere in the house. And the youngest person has to try to find it, like the youngest person who's there, which, by the way, tragically was not me. Somebody else had me beat by like a couple months. Like I've said, I hate not being the youngest person in the room. I wouldn't mind being the oldest, but being the second youngest is tragic. Passover is great, though. Passover and Easter happened like basically the same time this year, and honestly, I'm team Passover. Not just because of the wine, that's part of it, but I feel like Jewish holidays are so much more like real. Like, the traditions and the things you participate in are actually symbolic, because all Christian holidays kind of feel like the Super Bowl. Like, it just doesn't feel real or meaningful. As far as, like, Easter traditions, do those mean anything? Having, like, a basket of candy and sitting on a bunny's lap, is that significant in any way? Let's look this up. I feel like I've never researched this. Okay, let's search. Why are bunnies associated with Easter? It's autofilling. People are curious. Okay, the Easter Bunny first arrived in America in the 1700s. German immigrants settled in Pennsylvania and transported their tradition of an egg-laying hare called Osterhase or Osterhaus. Their children made nests in which this creature could lay its colored eggs. Okay, what does that have to do with Easter? Stems from pagan? Oh, there's different theories, I guess. We don't even know for sure. There's a theory that it stems from pagans, a goddess of fertility whose animal symbol was a bunny because of their energetic breeding. Jeez. Eggs are representative of new life. That makes sense for eggs. This is not... Nobody knows, I guess. I'm not getting an answer at all. Okay. Is the bunny laying the eggs? That's what I'd like to know. Or is the bunny just kind of hanging out with them? Well, so I guess we don't know if Easter traditions mean anything, because Passover, it's like very explicit. It's like we're eating matzah because we're celebrating when Jewish people escaped from slavery in Egypt and they had to like flee, so they didn't have time for the bread to rise. Like, that's a real tradition. That's re There's like a whole explanation for it. There's a significance for what it means to the Jewish people. It's not like, well, here's a bunny, because they have vigorous sex. Jesus. Also, Easter is an interesting holiday because, like, why shouldn't Easter be like the most significant Christian holiday? Why is Christmas the big thing? I feel like I'm doing like Seinfeld, like observational, whatever. Christmas is Jesus's birthday. Okay, good for him. We can have a little Christmas party, a little like a birthday party for him. But everybody has a birthday. That's not very impressive. The day he comes back to life, that's a little blip in the holiday machine. That doesn't feel right to me. I don't know. And I didn't even grow up religious at all. But in the US, it's kind of like if you grew up non-religious, you're like celebrating Christian holidays. And to be fair, it would be weird if like non-Jewish people were all celebrating Passover. I mean, I did celebrate Passover, but that's because I was with Jewish people. It would be weird if non-Jewish people were like, we're celebrating like, this specific part of like Jewish history. But I guess it is like fun to have holidays. I guess that's why non-religious people celebrate Christian holidays. We gotta have something. We gotta have something. And like Christianity is like the most, it's so accessible in the US. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. I always think of that Natasha Leggero joke where she's talking about how she converted to Judaism, and she's like talking about how hard it is, and it's like, oh, but if I wanted to convert to Christianity, I would just need to take a pamphlet from a lady's Foot Locker or something like that. And it's so true. What do you even have to do to convert to Christianity? Let's look this up. We're learning about religion today. What? Or, okay, how to convert to Christianity. Oh, baptism. How do I convert to Christianity? This is from gotquestions.org, which sounds really legit. To convert to Christianity, you must believe that Jesus is the Son of God who died for your sins and rose again. Okay, so to convert to Christianity, you have to believe in Christian beliefs. So that sounds pretty easy. I feel like you could start believing that anytime and then, like, boom, you're Christian. Should I go Christian? Is that my new era? Should I get into it? That is like the new like subversive thing for like young people in coastal cities now is to convert to Christianity, basically. Or at first it was just like going Catholic, but now I think it's broadly, if you want to be subversive, you convert to Christianity and then you like wear cotton dresses and you think about starting a farm, and that's like the new punk. Because now it's rare for someone to be religious, and now it's like this crazy thing. Oh my God, I was thinking about this earlier. Do you remember the era of like aggressive atheism? There was an era in, I would say, like the late 2000s. That was the peak of the type of person who was like, God is not real. And if you believe in a man in the sky, you're an idiot. And they were so like violent about it. And at the time, I was a kid and I was like, hell yeah, like, why believe in a God in the sky? Like, this is cool to like very much not believe in that. And now looking back, I'm like, okay, I still don't believe in God, although I think probably I should get into it because I need something, like something to do. I don't know. I still don't believe in God, but I'm like, who gives a fuck? Who cares? If somebody wants to believe in God, why are you like, but why don't you cite your sources for why God is real? I don't think that's the point of religion, is to like publish papers proving that God is real. I think the whole idea of faith is that you believe in it whether or not there's proof. Isn't that the whole point? That was so weird. That genre of person who was like, there's scientific proof that God isn't real. First of all, there can never be like science to prove that God isn't real, because it's like, well, did you look hard enough? You know what I mean? Like, maybe you just didn't find him. Her. I'm sorry. I apologize. Maybe you just didn't find her. Maybe you weren't looking hard enough. Maybe you forgot, you know, lift up the couch cushions. Maybe she's with the change. Yeah, I think science and religion are just two very different, like, they're not opposing forces. They're just, like, two very different things. Why were we pitting two queens against each other? Why were we doing that? We should have just loved and appreciated both of them. I feel like I'm hardcore vocal frying today, but it's because my throat hurts, my glands are swollen. I don't know what's going on with me. It's probably, once again, I'm gonna blame it on drinking two nights in a row. How dare I? Never again. I'm sober curious. Let's talk about Taylor Swift and Joe Alwyn's breakup. Okay? All right. I don't talk a ton about pop culture on this podcast. I feel like I should talk about it more. Not because I'm like, oh, nobody's talking enough about pop culture, but it's just like, you know, a weekly podcast. A lot of the time I feel like I don't have much to say, because just an hour a week is like a lot. So I totally understand why people just get on their podcast and like talk about pop culture. Like, I'm not, you know, expecting doing an hour a week that's going to be completely timeless is a little bit silly. So we need to talk about stuff like this every now and then. And also, this isn't just pop culture, because now we're getting into art, basically. Taylor Swift, she has written so much about this man. At this point, it isn't a conversation about gossip or pop culture or relationships. See, I don't even know how to pronounce relationships. That's about how familiar with them I am. At this point, it's not a conversation about any of that stuff. It's a conversation about art. We are talking about art. That's that. And this news was truly the shock of a century. I couldn't believe it. Even though now, thinking about it, I'm like, well, it is like probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, pop stars in the world. That carries so many of its own challenges. I can't imagine how hard it is to maintain a relationship like that. Also, they were together for 6 years, no ring. Not criticizing them, but I'm just saying, if it's been 6 years and you're not engaged, that's probably because you don't want to be. Which makes perfect sense. You don't have to be, but when that breakup happens, like, why are we all so shocked? Including me, I was shocked. Jaw on the floor. Just the fact that she wrote, "I hope I never lose you. I hope this never ends. I'll never walk Cornelia Street again." That's the kind of heartbreak time can never mend. "I'll never walk Cornelia Street again." And granted, Cornelia Street stretches for one block, so it wouldn't be that hard. This might be a funny TikTok, LOL. It wouldn't be that hard to never walk Cornelia Street again. It really wouldn't. But still heartbreak. It would be much more heartbreaking if she was like, I'll never walk Fifth Avenue again. I'll never walk Broadway again. I'll never walk Lexington again. That would have been a real, really something. But it's just crazy. But, you know, the lesson here is that dating is a journey and not a destination. Because I feel like people see stuff like this, whether it's in pop culture or whether it's in their real life with people that they know, and they're like, oh my God, love isn't real. Which, maybe so, but I feel like love is real, and so are breakups. So are breakups. They can both be real. Be real. Oh my God, rest in peace. Is anybody still using that? But like, just because a couple breaks up doesn't mean that love isn't real. It might mean that like soulmates aren't real, but who gives a fuck about that? I don't think something is a failure just because it ended. I think that can be very much a success. I mean, granted, if I were in either of their positions and I was in a 6-year-long relationship and then it ended, I mean, I would be livid. Are you kidding me? I would probably feel like I wasted 6 years of my life, but that isn't true. If you're in a relationship, even if it's very long-term, if it ends, that doesn't mean you wasted that time. You were learning and having fun, hopefully. Or at least learning. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely different if you, like, if you want to have kids. I'm glad I don't want to have kids because I feel like it's so much more pressure when you do want to. And then at that point, it's like, I don't know. But you can always adopt. You really can always adopt, and you can freeze your eggs if you have enough money. I know a lot of people want, they like really want their own kids genetically. I never really understood like what the significance was of that. It's very caveman-ish. So I guess that makes sense. It makes perfect sense. Like, you want your bloodline to keep going. That's a natural instinct. But I also think if you're thinking about it logically, like, that feels so egotistical to be like, well, I have to bring my genes to the next generation. Girl, what's so good about your genes? Take a look at you. How did those genes work out for you exactly? But I think this breakup case is... it's kind of good for people to show that, like, starting over past your 20s isn't the end of the world. Which it should, that should be common sense, that, like, if you're in your 30s and you're single, that is not the end of the world. That doesn't mean you're not going to find someone. You're still young. Relax. But I feel like people now are, like, so... bitter that women aren't settling down soon, as if there aren't real legitimate reasons why women aren't settling down soon. Like, if we can make our own money and do all that stuff like that, why do we want to be married when statistically marriage makes women less happy and men happier? Come on now. That, I won't even get into this because it makes me so mad the way people are like, women need a relationship so bad, like, they need to be married, they need to settle down, this is something that, like, all of them want more than anything, and men, oh, they just want to, you know, be around town and never settle down, and they don't want that, and they don't need that. And it's like, let's look at the numbers, girly, because marriage, statistically, married women have shorter lifespans than single women, and married men have longer lifespans than single men. Isn't that funny? But let's try to convince women to be desperate. Why don't we? I also want to talk about the new phenomenon of people buying blue checks on Instagram. This is a new development. I assume many of you have heard about this, but I am not sure exactly how it's done, but a lot of people now are buying Instagram verification. I really have no clue if there's like a new third party or if like Instagram has some sort of thing now, like they're copying Twitter. No clue. But I know so many people who have done it, and you're like pretty much able to check, because if you go to like a verified person's profile and you click on their check mark and it says they got it in March or April of 2023, then they definitely bought it. And I am like fascinated by this. And I almost want to ask someone, If someone admits to me that they bought their Instagram verification, I will absolutely ask them, like, why? What's the story there? I don't want to go up to the people I know and be like, I see what's going on. I would like an explanation for it. That feels a bit rude. But I'm just so curious about this because it's kind of the same thing with, like, buying followers. I love to see, my favorite thing to see on Instagram is when someone has like 100,000 followers and then of course they turn like the like number off so it just says liked by whoever and others, but then you click on that and you scroll through and there are about 40 people on that list, about that many, and it's like, did you think that nobody would be able to check that? I mean, some people don't even bother to turn the likes thing off. And they are just shamelessly like, yeah, I have 200,000 followers and I do get 33 likes. And what? I almost admire that. But isn't engagement like the most important? Like, who cares about whether or not you're verified? Do people care about what you have to say? Let's talk about that. But now we're kind of entering a new era because both on, at first on Twitter and now on Instagram, verification means nothing. Because now you can buy verification for Instagram. And on Twitter, not only can you buy verification, but I believe that the people who previously had it are going to have to like pay to keep it or something like that. Like it's just crazy. It means nothing anymore. Which on one hand, it's like, well, now, do you know, like, who you can trust? Like, do you know who's, like, a verified journalist or whatever? That was kind of a big part of it, was that journalists would be verified. But it's good because now it's, like, no longer a status symbol. It used to be such a big deal. And I think, and I hope, that whether it is like follower count or verification or even engagement, that we're starting to get to a point where it's like, who care? Like, do we care about what you have to say is the thing. Like, okay, that's nice that you have a verified checkmark. Do I want to follow you? Do I like this outfit you're wearing? How about that? Does that inspire me? Does that bring me joy? Marie Kondo, does this bring me joy? That's the question. And I'm fascinated by this. And I hope that somebody will come to me and be like, hey, I paid for a verified mark. So I can ask them, what was your thinking? What did you think would happen? Especially, I do understand if it's like part of your work, if you're, I don't know, someone who kind of works maybe alongside the public eye and hasn't quite made it to the actually getting verified part. I kind of understand that, but I've seen people who, like, they don't have a personal brand of any kind. They don't have, like, a particular thing that they do. No shame in that. Who does nowadays? Honestly, if you have a particular thing that you do, what are you doing? What are you up to? I don't get it. But I've seen people like that who are like regular people who like maybe go to fashion school or whatever who are buying verification. And I'm like, what? Who is this for? I feel like it's for yourself. I feel like they're doing that for the same reason that like I put on makeup when I don't go outside. It's just to know that I have that. Just kind of a comforting thing for me. I don't know. I'd love to learn more. This is going to be kind of a short episode, but that's probably good because my throat is up to something. Who knows? I'm just going to do a little media of the week. I have a couple things. First of all, this is in progress. I'm reading this book, but it's called The Life and Times of Dorothy Parker. And I found it at a used bookstore recently. Not that recently, but I just got around to reading it. I think I found it at Argosy on 59th, which is such a great one. There are so many like independent bookstores that are getting shut down. And every day I think to myself, if that one gets shut down, I'm shutting myself down. If you know what I mean. If you know what I mean. It's like written in the 70s. My copy has a wonderful old book smell. And hold on, let me find this book because I kind of want to read just like a paragraph so you get the idea of the tone. Okay, just paused and came back. Found it. It was in a pile of stuff next to my bed. Let me just read. I just flipped to a random page. Let me just read a few sentences that I feel like kind of represent the tone. Okay. The French did not take the view that a man was not successful if he was not making money. Near poverty was a normal European condition. Europeans valued the life of the mind. A dollar in Paris went a long, long way farther than a dollar in New York. Life was civilized. It was not, as Hemingway said, the kind of YMCA show that life was in the United States. There was no such nonsense as prohibition, and good wine could be had for very little money. It's very that. It has the tone of a book that has the old book smell. Like, it's so, it's lovely. It's about, you know, the life and times of Dorothy Parker, who, if you're not familiar, was a journalist and a poet in the 20s and had so many famous, very funny one-liners. You've definitely heard a few of them. Let me Google a few. Dorothy Parker quotes, "Beauty is only skin deep, but ugly goes clean to the bone. If you want to know what God thinks of money, just look at the people he gave it to. The first thing I do in the morning is brush my teeth and sharpen my tongue. A little bad taste is like a nice dash of paprika." Wait, did she say that? Why did I think... Oh, she said that. I thought Diana Vreeland said that. I'm getting all my quotes mixed up. But she was also a big drinker. She was also pretty inclined to melancholia, if you will. Just a fascinating person with this, it's like so funny, but has this darkness to her. And that is exactly the type of person I love. And I love learning about the brilliant, depressed girls of history. And she is very much that. And I can't wait to finish this book. Because it's just fabulous. And the other thing, I finally got around to watching Roman Holiday with Audrey Hepburn and love of my life, Gregory Peck. Literally my lock screen, Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird, I truly believe is the best a man has ever looked in the history of the world. Gorgeous. Gorgeous. But if you haven't seen it, I think it came out in like 53 or something. And Audrey Hepburn plays a princess who is living this kind of stifling life. She's like doing press all the time. She has no real life of her own. And then one day she finally like gets out on the city and she runs into Gregory Peck, who plays a journalist who's trying to get an interview with the princess. He doesn't realize that she is the princess at the time. And then she ends up staying at his place, not in any sexual way, but staying at his place, and they kind of fall in love. And it's such a good story. I think it's been named as like one of the best rom-coms of all time. It is like over 2 hours long, which is the reason why I avoided it for so long. Especially old movies, they don't really cut to the chase because they don't have so many film shortcuts we use nowadays, and we can just kind of understand what's happening without everything being spelled out. But a beautiful story, very like wholesome, very, I mean, what I wrote when I of course did a Letterboxd review for it is that it's like wholesome and charming, but Gregory Peck's sex appeal just hits you over the head and knocks you out cold. He is so sexy. Him in that like journalist suit, his little journalist uniform the whole movie. I mean, I truly believe that he's the most beautiful man of all time. And even though this is a fairly innocent movie, it doesn't feel innocent because it's Gregory Peck, baby. It's Gregory Peck. So those are my sort of recommendations of the week. I hope you had fun listening. I have to go grocery shop because I have not been to a grocery store in about 10 days, which means that I am potentially about to get scurvy. So I'll keep you posted on that. But thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye.